sala. Ok, first thing, during the break some of you asked about the text for the written exercise of past years. I have linked here on my website on the acoustic course page the testi esame directory containing the text of the written examination used in past years, several years ago. I see you see dating back to 98, regarding the technical physics course. Every one of these examinations did always include one of the four questions about acoustics, and those are good model of the typical exercise you can find during the examination also for this course. Remember, the topics for the written exercise are only the first part of the course, the part about noise, more or less, not the electroacoustical part, which is only included in the oral examination, in the question, not in the exercise. Okay. So, let me start now about Ramsete. Ramsete is the first pyramid tracing software which has been created. Okay. In any case, previously other type of ray tracing program were used in acoustic. Just employing thin rays like laser beams or divergent rays which more or less are cones. Both techniques have problems because a thin ray never hits a receiver, which is a point. You need to define receiving volumes, not receiving point, if you use thin rays, because if not, you need to launch billions of rays, and no one is actually going to hit a point, because ray tracing is like a Monte Carlo method. You launch rays from the source in every direction at random. So there is no determinity, no causality in getting to hit a receiver if you launch a thin ray and the receiver is a point. For having some probability to hit the receiver must be big. Okay? So that was the first approach in the 80s, actually, using thin rays and big receiver. In the 90s, the most widely employed algorithm was cone tracing, shown here. The problem with cone tracing is that the cones don't merge each other nicely. If you keep the cone not intersected, then there are areas where you never hit a receiver because they don't cover the spherical surface. So you need to intersecate the width of the cones like shown here, but if a receiver happens to be inside this intersection area, it will get the energy from the source twice. So you have a 3 decibel error, actually. So in practice, cone tracing can give you a rough simulation of a room, but it's not an accurate scientific method of simulating the impulse response inside the room. So pyramid tracing was born in 93, actually. Pyramid tracing divides the surface of the sphere, as shown here, in curvilinear triangles that are in wedge with triangular section, which join each other nicely without leaving uncovered areas, but without also having superposed area. So every receiver is only hidden only by one pyramid, not by the others. So it is much more accurate and much more fast also, because you don't need to cover the errors by launching millions of rays. Okay? It's not anymore so statistical. is almost deterministic because every receiver only needs one pyramid. With previous Monte Carlo method, you get convergence to the right, the correct result, only by launching millions of rays and statistically averaging the result. So while with pyramid, with thin ray tracing or cone tracing, it was normal to use millions of rays, with pyramid tracing, the number of pyramids needed to be launched from each source is in the order of several hundreds or perhaps 4,000 at maximum. So the computation time is much shorter. With cone tracing or ray tracing, a simulation, acoustical simulation at mid of the 90s was taking 3 days, typically, for computing a room. Ramsete computed even at that time in a few minutes. Nowadays, with the computer we have today, Ramsete simulates a room like this one in 20 seconds, 30 seconds. It's not yet real time, so it cannot compute real time while the source or the receiver is moving in the room, but we are quite close to real time computation. There is some problem with the pyramid tracing scheme. As shown here, two kinds of error can happen. As the whole pyramid always follow the history of the central ray of each pyramid, if the central ray hits a surface and is reflected back, a receiver can be inside the reflected beam and receive reflected energy even when that's wrong, because this receiver should not get any reflection by this wall, because the wall finish here, and so this receiver is outside the illuminated area from this reflector. Also, the opposite error can occur, actually much more often than this error. In this case, receiver number 2 is not getting energy, and it should get. So it is not so true that pyramid tracing is a completely deterministic and accurate method. There are intrinsic errors, missed detection, like this one, or overdue detection. You get a detection which should not be got. Both errors tend to compensate partially on a large number of pyramids, and this is the reason for which you still need to launch, for example, 1,000 pyramids, because some statistical averaging smooths out this error. As you see here, with an image source model, when you launch a pyramid, you are actually losing some part of the reflection. It is like if the pyramid becomes narrower. As long as it reflects, it loses some piece of reflection. So it becomes narrower and narrower and illuminates a number of receivers which is smaller than what should be. In the end, this translates in a number of reflections arriving to each receiver, which is not increasing as the theory predicts. Along the time running, this is time in milliseconds, as the rays bounce inside the room thousands and millions of times, the number of energy arrival to each receiver should increase with the square of time. That is the Sabin theory, actually. So, following the Sabin theory, in a perfectly reverberant room, the number of rays arriving each millisecond at the receiver, it is called the temporal density of room reflection, should increase with time. In reality, in a pyramid tracing computing scheme, initially the number of received pyramids follow the theoretical curve, but then it flattens to an almost average long time value. In practice, you never get all the reflection you should get. This produces an underestimation over the, of the reverberant tail. This is the reverberant tail versus time. The red curve is a simulation with a large number of pyramids which suffer of a very small error and is substantially correct, the, what we should get. If we launch only 256 pyramids with no correction, we get the blue curve. So we are underestimating the reverberant tail, we are underestimating the reverberation time. So we need to apply a correction, and apply this correction, we get the black curve, and the black curve has the correct slope, even being computed with only 256 pyramids. This is the trick allowing for fast computation. Without tail correction, also pyramid tracing would require millions of rays for being accurate. The correction is computed employing the theoretical estimate of the temporal density of reflection, computing instead the real time behavior of the temporal density, computing the ratio between the real and the theoretical temporal density, and employing is a multiplicative correction factor which brings up the tail of the curve. This is done automatically by Ramsete, but you must be aware of this fact, because if you don't, if you use a too small number of pyramids, you can still get some error in the evaluation of the reverberant tail. At the time in which this paper was written, the computational power available was very little, so it was mandatory to use only a few number of pyramids. Nowadays, with the fast computer we have, who cares? Why should I be worried about this tail correction problem when I can easily launch 32,000 pyramids? It takes only a few seconds more. So nowadays this problem is not so important as in the past. Okay? So having understood more or less how the pyramid scheme works, let me start using Ramsete and looking for the result of a very simple simulation. Close this one. Okay. And launch Ramsete. Ramsete is a program containing a number of applications. I think 6 or 7 applications. We have a workflow. We always start with Ramsete CAD, which is a CAD, so you draw the geometry. Then you use the tracer, the Ramsete tracer, for doing the computation. And then with RamView, you analyze the result. So these are the 3 main modules of Ramsete. We have 2 ancillary modules called Material Manager for analyzing the material property like absorption coefficient or sound insulation of different materials, and this module is employed just seldom when we have to introduce in the database of the material some new material. You got the data sheet by the manufacturer of an absorbing material or a sound insulating material, and you want to enter the new data in the database. Usually you don't need to use this software for looking at the value of the absorption coefficient of different kinds of building materials. Some are just constant for check, and some are, these are those roofs, ceiling material made by Rockfon, and these are those perforated metal sheet, again used in roofs. This is perspex, like glass, but plastic, and so on. There are hundreds of material in this database. Here you see I am using the cracked version of Ramsete. When it is say unlocked, it means cracked, actually. So this is the material database, and we have the source manager, which is the database of some sources. The database of some source contains both noise source or loudspeaker. Let me look at, for example, at a Bose loudspeaker, 101 loudspeaker, an horrible loudspeaker, I must say. So it loaded the directivity data of this loudspeaker, and it can show you the balloon of directivity of the loudspeaker at various frequencies. Increasing the frequency, the loudspeaker becomes more directive. You see the polar chart showing you the loudspeaker directivity. So Ramsete does not only compute with omnidirectional source, but it has models for directive source, both of the loudspeaker type or like noise source. Let me load another, which instead is some machine. Ah, human is the human voice, of course. Instruments. These are musical instruments, trombone, okay, again, this is like a loudspeaker, but is actually a noise source, you see. We have a lot of these sources loaded here. Those are probably show. No, nothing here, which... Yeah, this is a textile machine. Vamatex, un telaio tessile, for making clothes, for making fabric. Those are experimental data. You see, the pattern is not so smooth as for loudspeaker. For loudspeaker, often the data are theoretical. Instead, these are measured data, and measured directivity data are much more rough, spatially. So, you have a database of source and a database of materials. You need to import these two information inside the CAD model of your room. So now we start making a CAD modeling of a room. This is a very simple CAD with a limited set of drawing tools available. You need to take some experience using it, but really it is quite easy because it has only a limited number of tools. Let me start drawing a box, which will be our room, this room actually. So we design a box starting from the origin. I think this room is more or less 14 meters long. It is more or less 10 meters wide. You see the coordinates here in the low part of the screen. Okay, we close the box. How is tall this box? I think is more or less 5 meters tall. Okay, it has also the floor and the roof, so it is a complete closed box. And we choose the material, then we can change it. And for example, Intona Colissio is good for the walls. Of course, it's not good for the ceiling or for the floor. So we need to change this later. Okay, we have this box. If we look into the sonometry, we can see that the room which we have designed is now a parallelepiped. Inside this room, we need now to assign a different property to the ceiling. So we click until we get the ceiling, and pressing enter, you see the property of this surface, which is not made by Intona Colissio, but is calcestruzzo, muro in calcestruzzo grezzo. Okay, same for the floor. This is the floor, and this instead is again calcestruzzo, but liscio, verniciato. this is gerato. Okay. More or less the properties are correct. Now we have the window there. There is a large glass window behind on that area here. So we need first to select this wall, and then we add a window. Actually, it is a door because it's going down to the floor. So this is a door. Okay, we place it here. 1, 2, 3, 4. It is 8 meter wide and 4 meter tall. Okay, and is made by glass. Vetro. Finestra di vetro. Okay. You see the window has been created on the back wall. Now we have 3 small windows on this side wall instead. So we need to select the side wall, this one, and here we need to draw these three windows here. So this is a window, this one. We click in the position of the first window, this one. It is 1 meter wide. It starts 1 meter from the floor, but the 8 is probably 2 meter. Is in vetro. The first one is here. Okay, first window. Another one. So we need again to select the wall. Get a new window, which is probably here. Or here. Okay, and a third window, so we click here, get a new window here, and is more or less here. Okay, 3 windows on this side, 1 window there. Okay, we should add some internal fittings, like those desk where you are seated and this desk here. For doing that, we use again the rectangular box here. So we have a block of seats in this area. The height is just 1 meter. There is no floor, but there is roof, and this will be sedili or something like that. Muro, tappeto, controsoffitto, solaio, intonaco, poltrone. This is a church, Santa Lucia. Let me see if we find something more suitable for your seat. Sedie. Okay. Keep this one. And this block is the whole sitting area, including you, actually. And we make the same here. Tuck, 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 tuck. 1 meter, no floor. The material is okay. We have 2 blocks of seats here. And then there should be my table here, which is just a flat surface, so we can draw something like that. 1 meter, same material. It's not centered. So what we do? We select and we drag it. Yeah, more or less. Okay. Okay, I am not drawing this side. But there are. So let's draw also these two sides. From here to here, 1 meter, okay. From here to here, okay. You see here how it is being built. And this side here too. Okay. No, that's wrong. Try again. From here to here. One. Okay, now the desk is closed. I think it should be enough for a rough simulation. Let me save this. Temp. Aula 7. Okay. Now we can insert a source, my voice, or perhaps those two horrible Bose loudspeaker there, because we are using them. So let me use the loudspeaker there. So this is the symbol of the loudspeaker. They are more or less in this position. The grid is not small enough for placing them properly. So I reduce the grid size from 1 meter to 0.2 meter, which allow me to be more precise in placing the loudspeaker. So this is the loudspeaker. I have to place it here and point it here because it is aimed there. And they are directed, we know. If we don't use the Omni, but we use the Bose, the Bose 101 All Plus, okay, this is the first loudspeaker, and then we place another one here, more or less, pointing here, and again we get the 101 loudspeaker here. Well, source position is 1.7 meter from ground. I think that is more than 1.7 meter. It is probably 2.5 meter. Okay. We need to correct this one. 2.5. Okay. More or less the room is ready. Now we need to add receivers, listening point, which is like microphone. I don't know why, but instead of having the symbol of a microphone, here we have the symbol of an headphone, which makes no sense, because what we are entering now are microphones, not headphones. However, we can insert a single point where we want, or we can automatically generate a grid of receiving point. In this case, I want to just create a grid, it's faster. So I just click, for example, here, and because this is just one. I need to keep pressed the shift key, the minuscola key. Okay, keeping it pressed, oops. Now, without a mouse is so difficult. Wow, che palle. Shift, okay. We create a grid of receiver covering the whole area at an height, which is your ear height, which is usually 1.2 meter for seated people, okay? Flat, so all the vertex of this area have the same height. This is not a sloping area. With a step of 2 meters, so we will place a receiver every 2 meters. Okay, it's not perfectly centered, so what we can do is to select all receiver and then move this something like here. So the receiver grid is more centered inside the room. We have now 35 receivers, which is not a huge number, but should be enough for our simulation. I think the data input is more or less finished because we enter the geometry, we assign the property of the material, we enter the sources, and we enter the receiver. That's all. So we now can launch the computation. We get our tracer program, Ramsete tracer. We load the ray file which we want to compute, temp, aula 7 ray. Those parameters usually are left to the standard value. However, the subdivision level tells you the number of pyramids, because each number here doubles the number of pyramids, because each pyramid is divided in two. So 8 means 2 to the power of 8, which should be at the end 1000 pyramids, more or less, I don't remember. Time is the length of the impulse response being computed, so you follow the pyramid for 2 seconds, which is enough, because in this room reverberation time is not longer than 2 seconds. Time resolution gives you the slice in time which is used for computing the impulse response, so it is a 10 millisecond slot, which is enough in most cases. Air temperature and humidity. That's all. We leave everything at standard setting and we launch the simulation. The computation takes 12 seconds, as you see, which is a quite reasonable computation time. The pyramids are currently 2,000 and the computation is done. A very important point is to save separate source. This had produced 2 separate result files, one for source A and one for source B. But in this case, we did not check this box, so we only got one result file containing both the sources working simultaneously. This is a mono system, it's not stereo. The same signal is feeding both loudspeakers. So in this case, it makes perfectly sense to make only one simulation with the 2 sources acting simultaneously. I cannot feed only one of them. They always work together. So the computation is done. We can look at the result, employing the 3rd main program, which is called RAMView, RAMSetView. Again, track. We can open at once the geometry and the impulse response which has been computed. I go to the temp directory. I load the result file. The result file has this strange extension with 3 underscores. If it was done a separate source simulation, then I had got one with extension underscore A, and the second source had the extension underscore B. When they are summed together, the extension is always this one, underscore. I open this. Oops, it is warning me that the reverberation time is longer than 2 seconds, and it is suggested to repeat the computation with a time of computation of at least 3.7 seconds. I'm not sure this is true. It's probably an artifact. Look at the result. Of course, I want to save the computed parameters. Here I see again my room. I can see it in 2D view, but I can also see it in 3D view, as I like. And I can look at the result in various ways. One very important way is to look at the impulse response. I can choose the impulse response chart, and now for every receiver in the room, I can see the impulse response which has been computed for this room. They are almost similar, and also the reverberation time. You can place the two cursor and compute the reverberation time in this decay, is more or less the same as you see, 0.8 seconds. This is at 1 kHz frequency band. At lower frequency band, here you see the problem. Probably the absorption data entered for the materials of the seats and of the walls are wrong at very low frequency. And here a very long computation time, reverberation time is estimated. That's wrong. The real situation is this one, with a reverberation time of the order of 1 second, more or less, which is the same value which we did measure in the room. Of course, this is the tricky point, to tune the material absorption coefficient until the simulated results match with the experimental reverberation time result. Looking at this result here is not handy. We can just have a table of reverberation time, for example, T20, and the first row of the table is already the average over the room. So here we can see if the value at every frequency are close to the experimental value or not. If they are not close, and in this case we see there is a wrong value at 125 Hz, we need to come back to the material properties, change the material properties, and make the computation again. Let me do that for the 125 Hz. It is probably the absorption of U which is wrong at this frequency. It was material number 400, if I remember correctly. Yeah, sedia. You see, at 250 Hz there is a lot of absorption, at 125 there is no absorption. This is crazy, it's definitely wrong. So let me apply also here huge absorption value even at very low frequency. Okay, save the result and repeat the computation with the new absorption coefficient. Sorry, RTWin, LS7, start. Just 12 second computation and we will have. So retuning the model is done by trial and error, but it is usually very fast. Okay, done. Let me reload the result and see if now the results are credible. No warning, this is already a good sign. View the impulse response and going down in frequency. Now it's fine. Okay. Fine. So we can also get the value of other acoustical quantity like clarity C50, which is the clarity for speech, and you see quite high value, much larger than one, and in reality that makes sense also with the experimental results. The clarity is good. We can have evaluation of STI, speech transmission index. And again, STI is quite large. The wideband STI is here, is the lean band. 0.79 is a good value. In fact, in this room, you can almost perfectly understand me. Final thing, we can do the plot, the chart. We can chart the result. For example, we can chart the sound pressure level in the room. Map Doditer 2D, equivalent awaited level, for example. Okay. And this is the result. Of course, the loudest point are those immediately close to the loudspeaker, because they are close to the source. But the level does not change a lot. In the loudest point, you have 123, the loudspeaker are always considered working at maximum power. Maximum power of those loudspeakers is approximately 200 watts. If I push the gain at maximum, you get a very loud level. Of course, it's not usually being employed at such high level. So if you want to make a more realistic simulation, you should reduce the power of those loudspeakers, because that's maximum power, but it makes sense for a noise source, but not for a loudspeaker. A loudspeaker is usually operated at less than 10% of the maximum rated power. So it lasts here this way, and it doesn't make you deaf, okay? So this is the map of awaited equivalent level. Another interesting map, for example, is the map of STI, of the speed transmission index, or the map of clarity. Let me make the map of clarity, 50-50. Maximum clarity is again, of course, close to the source, but it is quite high also in this area, because the loudspeakers are directive and are bringing a lot of direct sound in this region. Instead, in this area, we are outside the beam of the loudspeaker. Only the reverberant field arrives here. The direct sound is not going here. So here, where I am sitting, clarity is low, and it is a good thing. So the sound of the loudspeaker does not feed back inside this microphone, because there is little direct sound from the loudspeaker to this microphone, avoiding that the system start howling in Larsen effect. Okay? So having the source, having the microphone in a small clarity area is fine, because it avoids feedback. So this map is already quite interesting. Let me do the map of the STI. No, this is the frequency, sorry. Let me choose LIM, which means full bandwidth STI, and choose STI here, and see what happens. Okay, there is a region of weak STI, here in the center, weak, relatively weak STI, in this central region, but it's not a problem, because no one is sitting there. Okay, that's the corridor. People are seated here, and so the arrangement of loudspeaker in this room is good, makes sense. It provides sound energy where it is required, and avoids to push energy here and here, where it is not required. So actually, this is a good classroom. It does not have significant acoustical problems. In some cases, instead, there are echoes. In the impulse response, you see echoes showing you a strong peak very late in time, not so late, approximately 100 to 200 milliseconds in this region, which is disturbing. It's not occurring in this room, but in some room it occurs. When it happens, you can see from where the reflection comes. First of all, we need to go to 3D mode. Let me change the viewpoint so that we have a larger image of the room. I am changing the camera position, you see. Okay. Now, we would see the ray path, but the computation was done without storing the ray path. For storing the ray path, I need to click this one and, for example, store reflection up to third order. Repeat the computation again. Storing the ray path allows you to see from where each room reflection is coming. And this is useful if you have echo problems. I say there are no echo problems in this room, But if there was five open impulse response plus the only, okay, view, draw 3D, okay. Now, how can you make this analysis of the ray paths? You still see a chart like the impulse response of before, but now let's zoom in the first area. You see these pink lines. Those are the ray paths, actually. And you can move the cursor looking at the path of each ray. Let me go back to the direct sound, excuse me. Path number one. This is the direct sound from the loudspeaker there, loudspeaker 1, to receiver 1. This direct sound has a time of flight of 26 milliseconds. There is something here before, of course. That is for loudspeaker 2, which is closer to receiver 1. Let me go, for example, here, to this receiver here. Sorry. To this receiver here. Now the direct sound is the first sound arriving to the receiver. This is the second, the reflection over the wall and then on the receiver, you see. Then there is the one on the floor. There is the one on the wall and on the floor. The walls, being the cause of the reflection, are being evidenced in green. This is over the ceiling. Wall and ceiling, and so on. So, if you have a disturbing echo here, you don't have in this case, but let me, for example, think that this one is a disturbing echo. If it was much louder, then it had been a disturbing echo. If this was a disturbing echo, you see that this echo is involving source B, going to the floor, going to the ceiling, and going to the receiver. How can you reduce the amplitude of this disturbing echo? By adding absorption to one of the two surfaces. One is the floor, and it's not a good idea to place a carpet on the floor in a classroom. It is going to become dirt in a few weeks. And who cleans it? No one. So the good idea in this case is to make the ceiling absorbing. And in many classrooms, you see the ceiling being soundproofed with sound-absorbing material. For example, in this building, if you go into the large classroom, like room A, B, C, D, the large classroom, have a ceiling which is sprayed with a soft layer of gypsum mixed with vegetal fiber, and this kind of plaster sprayed over the ceiling is highly absorbing. So this kind of reflection over the ceiling are damped by the sound absorbing material. So in practice, what we have to do in the classroom with this software? We have first to make a nice drawing of the classroom. As I show you, it takes only a few minutes to draw a simple geometry like a rectangular classroom. You can also load much more complex geometry. Ramsete can deal with very complex geometries. But in those cases, probably it's better to make the drawing in AutoCAD and then convert it. This, for example, is a sport arenas. Look here. Is the sport arena in the city of Modena. And this is already a quite complex drawing. Doing that with Transete CAD is feasible, but not so practical. A good CAD operator prefers to work in AutoCAD, save the DXF file again, and import it in Ramsete, which can have a DXF in import from AutoCAD. So for very complex geometry, it's better to draw in AutoCAD and then import. For simple geometry, like the one you are going to study during the lab exercise, you can very easily use Ramsete card, which is plenty enough. There are already tools like making gradons, for making carved gradons, like in a Greek theater, or there are the possibility to draw cylinders and spheres. So it already has some powerful drawing tool, not as powerful as a true CAD package like AutoCAD, of course. Final thing, you can navigate the drawing with a sort of rendering tool. So there is this OpenGL rendering tool. You can also walk in and you can change the lens. Let me walk in. Oop, we are inside now. Look around. You see the receivers here. Okay. And this is very important to check that there are no holes. Because if in the drawing you leave some missing surface, then the rays, the pyramid, will escape from the room through the holes. So the computation is wrong. So this is a very important tool for complex geometry to look around and check that the whole room is closed, there are no holes and no errors in the geometry. With the wireframe model of the room, is not so easy to check for the correct geometry. With this 3D rendering tool, you can also walk. The commands are the same as in video games. So people use it to fighting video games, navigate this geometry very quickly, because you use the same mouse and keyboard controls like in video games, like walking, going back, forth. Right, you see. Oops, I am outside now. Okay. I think it's enough for today. I invite you to download this software and the NVIDIA software during the holiday, test it on your computer at home, and when you are back in January in the classroom for doing the lab exercise, you should already be a little used to employing this software. Of course, on the website there are the manuals for both software, but don't trust too much to manuals. The manuals are not updated to the latest version of the software, and I think that if a computer user needs the manual, something is wrong with the program. A good program should be employed without never opening the manual. Just when we have seen these very simple tricks for starting to work, it should be very easy for you to be able to use the software without too much concern about what is behind. It's like driving the car. You don't need to be a mechanical engineer for driving a car. And this is the same for this kind of software. They are designed to be used not from a software engineer who writes this program. They are for normal people who only know a little about acoustics. You must know something, of course. You must know the concept of cause-effect relationship. You must know the concept of directivity of the sound source. You must know the concept of impulse response, because that is the basic quantity being computed by the software. But after that, you don't need to really understand the pyramid tracing algorithm or the detail of the tail correction or toe trick. You know there are sources with power and directivity. There are receivers. There is the geometry with the material properties. And that's all for you. And changing those input data to the software, you should drive the software to produce results as close as possible to the measurement result. So in the classroom, in the first lesson, we measure the room, both in terms of sound pressure level and reverberation time, only these two parameters actually. We don't take time and effort enough for doing a more refined tuning regarding clarity or speed transmission index. We only measure sound pressure level and reverberation time in octave bands. Then, next lesson, you must simulate the same room, making the software as close as possible to the experimental result. I have seen past year several students did reach a perfect matching. The two curves of experimental and theoretical result were almost the same. I can show you some report of the students of past year. Okay, this one for example. This is describing the measurement technique with the sine sweep method, the microphone, the calibrator, the dodecahedron, because we are going to bring this kind of dodecahedron loudspeaker inside the classroom for doing the measurement. Calibration of the microphone. Oops. This is the sound pressure level during calibration, which is 94 decibel. Okay. Again, calibration. Background noise measurement. Okay. This is the background noise. Measurement of the voice signal being radiated by the loudspeaker with the spectrum of the voice measured at the receiver. This one. Impulse response measurement with the sine sweep. This is the sine sweep. Every student has to generate a test signal and the corresponding inverse filter, because even if there is only one computer actually playing sound, for deconvolving the signal over your computer, you need to have this inverse filter. And the inverse filter is automatically generated when you generate the sweep. So every one of you must generate the test signal. Also, if only one of you will actually connect with the dodecahedron and radiate the signal. So this is the check of perfect deconvolution. This is the measurement repeated 4 times because the sweep was played 4 times. This is one of the 4 measured impulse response. STI is being computed by the impulse response. And also the acoustical parameter, it is not shown here, but the acoustical parameter plugin is employed for getting sound pressure level and reverberation time T20 value. And those are stored. Next lesson, CAD, starting with Ramsete CAD, the room is progressively drawn, adding window, adding door, check that the room is closed, adding fitting inside the room, also the desks, also the receivers. Those are actually the microphone position of the students during the workshop. You see, everyone did have one microphone connected to his computer. Ramsete tracer doing the computation. Ramsete view showing the impulse response and the discrete reflection. A lot of receiver for doing the plots, the maps. The source was here, of course. Last thing, which I did not show you, Ramsete has the possibility to export the result as a WAV file. So you get a simulated impulse response which you can compare by listening with the measured impulse response. Let me see this in this, no, not in this case. In this case, the room which we have computed today. Okay, this room. We can export the result to WAV. It can be binaural or mono omni. Let me make it omni at 48 kHz. Save it as a WAV file. Export. The result should be here. This one. Okay, this this is the simulated impulse response of the room. And you can compare it directly with the measured impulse response of the room. Not sure if it is really similar. We can check. We did measure that. You remember? Public. What was higher? This one, probably. It doesn't sound exactly the same for the spectrum of the loudspeaker. If you see the spectrum of the loudspeaker we did employ for the measurement is like a panettone, I don't know the English name, and instead the simulated one is probably perfectly flat. Exactly. Well, it's exactly flat, but it is band limited. Because we did employ a Bose loudspeaker which is only analyzed between 125 Hz and 4 kHz, and within this frequency band the spectrum is more or less flat, while our original loudspeaker was more broadband, going up to 15 or 16 kHz, but the spectrum is falling down at high frequency. So in practice the spectrum sound different. But if we look, let me pack the two in a single stereo wave file. Okay. So we have the experimental as left and the simulated as right. We make the acoustical parameter evaluation. This is experimental because it's left, and this is simulated because it's right. And if we look, for example, at the reverberation time T20, remember, look only between 125 and 4 kHz, because that's the region where we did the simulation. Here we have values which are around 1 second, more or less, and here again the values are around 1.2 seconds. The model is not calibrated. We should now refine the simulation until we get more or less the same reverberation time at every frequency band, and the same sound pressure level, actually. This is the sound pressure level. Also, this should be more or less the same, and is not actually. So the numerical simulation should be adjusted until also the sound pressure level is the same. When the numerical simulation is perfectly tuned, you usually get errors of sound pressure level of less than 1 decibel and of reverberation time of less than 0.2 seconds. At every frequency, then everything is tuned, and if the simulation is properly done, the two signals sound very similar, which are not sounding now. Okay, the numerical one always has some roughness. That is because it's numerical, but that's not the problem. The problem is the main spectrum and the main reverberation time. It cannot be really identical to the measured one. Okay? Everything clear? But during the lesson you can ask, you can make error, try again, lose all your data because you did forget to save, and so on. And all that is experience, of course. Okay. Let's stop. And Merry Christmas to everyone, of course.